5th. Profit from everything that takes place in the day to keep you in contact with God. As we've been saying, and as we need to develop the habit of acting on, with God, nothing ever happens by chance. Everything is part of His providence. Every word you hear, every light you see, every event that takes place, no matter how apparently trivial, is from God. Chesterton has a fine expression, the tremendous trifles of life. He is behind everything, within everything, beyond everything, around everything, and the cause of everything in our lives. He's in the air we breathe, the water we drink, the hand we shake, the voice we hear. Everything is intended by Him to remind us of Him and draw us closer to Him. Well, then remember the qualification. Everything is meant to draw us closer to God. Everything, everything. But in three different ways. Either by enjoying what He sends, or dismissing what He permits, or giving up what He asks of us in sacrifice. Some creatures He wants us to embrace and enjoy. Others, the moment we see them, He wants us to turn our backs and walk away. And still others that can be very pleasant, He wants us to let go our grip on and give up. That's number one, prayer. Second area of resolute decision, that's my definition of a resolution, a resolute decision. Most of us don't have to make up our minds. We know quite well what we're supposed to do. It's making up our wills. Second area of resolution, self-mastery. Beyond prayer, we must become masters of ourselves. What does self-mastery mean? It means, with apologies for counting, first, that we master our thoughts and keep them under control. Unkind thoughts, envious thoughts, jealous thoughts, angry and irritable thoughts, vain and foolish thoughts, useless and wasteful thoughts. We shall control our desires only in the measure to which we control our thoughts. And unless we control our desires, we shall never master our actions. All self-mastery begins in the mind. Second, we must exert ourselves to master our words and keep them under control. Proud and conceited words, painful and hurting words, sharp and bitter words, frivolous and worldly words. Before we finish, let me at least once define what the word worldly means. Being warned not to be worldly. But we're in the world. We're breathing the world. What are we to do to keep from becoming worldly? Worldliness is dislike of and running away from the cross. For worldly people, this is the only life that either exists or at least that counts. To the worldly mind, there is no meaning to suffering. We know better. Let's act on what we believe. Third, beyond mastering our thoughts and our words, let's labor to master our feelings and moods. Each of us has a different temperament, and each has his or her own personality to cope with. With apologies for a little personality analysis. If we are the melancholic type, you know, the brooding, ponderous, pessimistic type, we must strive to control our tendency to depression and despondency. Second, if we are the choleric type, pardon me, that's spelled C-H-O-L-E-R-I-C. If we are the choleric type, we must try to master our irascible urges that tend to flare up at the least provocation. If we are the lethargic type, we must work might and main to overcome our tendency to laziness, fulfilling the second law of Newton in the spirit. He says, that's the second law, a body at rest tends to remain at rest. For a lot of people, a spirit at rest tends to remain at rest. Don't bother me, I'm resting. We must strive to overcome our natural tendency, if this is our temperament, to always taking the easy way out, avoiding exertion, positively geniuses. And the way some people avoid work. You stand in admiration at their ability to not exert themselves. For some people on this level, it means just plain get going. Whether it's physical labor, or mental exertion, or with emphasis, spiritual labor which is needed to pray well. And finally, if we are the so-called sanguine type, everything is rosy. Life is one long, sweet dream. we must exert ourselves to keep our bubbling, optimistic personality from running away with us. We have to make sure that we don't start things and not finish them. I've talked to too many superiors in too many convents who tell me, "Father, she's a fine sister. The only trouble is, what she starts, someone else has to finish." We've got to control our tendency to start talking without first thinking. I honestly believe a lot of people naturally reverse the process. They talk first by impulse. Then you can tell they started thinking what they said, but often irreparable damage is done. Or again, with this temperament, undertaking a task without giving the matter careful and always prayerful consideration. For us believers, it's not just think before you speak or think before you act. It is think prayerfully before you speak or act. Cultivate the habit of thinking in God's presence. And he has the divine ability of hearing you think. You don't have to raise your voice with God. So much for level number 2 in what I'm calling retreat resolution. Number 3, following out the Holy Father's teaching, charity. It is impossible to give too much attention to the practice of Christian fraternal charity. For one thing, as faith tells us, it's according to our charity that we shall grow in the love of God. We shall grow in the likeness of Christ, since this is the one virtue, he tells us, we are to especially practice. Like him, for him, with him, and through him, that is, through his grace, which alone makes true Christian charity possible. By charity here we mean loving our neighbor. Some practical suggestions drawn from years of experience. I have 7 practical recommendations. You'd think I had thought this out before I put the notes together. Frankly, I did. First, these are my 7 rules for the practice of charity. First, if you wish to love others, think well of others. If I have kind thoughts, I will speak and act kindly. If I have unkind thoughts, what else do you expect? I speak from what's on my mind. Isn't that the teaching of Christ? From the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Second, if you wish to love others, make every effort to see what is good in others. As we mentioned in an earlier context, one of the great mysteries of life on earth is our heroic love of ourselves. And why do we love ourselves so much? Because we see so much that is good in ourselves. Reread the Gospels with this in mind. Isn't this the Master's teaching? To work and exert ourselves to see what's good in others, and not to be constantly finding what's wrong in others. Remember, the mote and the beam. Third, if you wish to love others, resign yourself to giving up your own convenience, your own ease, your own preference, and personal likes and dislikes. Fourth, if you wish to love others, do things for others. We are always, with effortless ease, doing things for ourselves. Do things for others. Fifth, if you wish to love others, do not look for gratitude in return. Maybe what you do will be appreciated, and maybe not. We are to love others as Christ loves us, and we know only too well how often we fail to appreciate God's goodness to us. How come we're so demanding in gratitude from others? The gall! We who can be so ungrateful for all the great things that God is doing for us. Sixth, if you wish to love others, expect to be imposed upon. Blessed rule. And you will not be disappointed. And again, I'm not drawing on my imagination. This is the teaching of Jesus. To lend and not get back. Just assume. If you get it back, fine. If you do, thank God. If you don't, thank God. To give and not be given in return. I don't know how many beggars there are in Chicago. All I know, there must be thousands in New York. Beautiful. They keep reminding me of my relationship with God. Beggar. Well, if I expect to receive from him, I'd better give to others. You don't expect a receipt even from a beggar, right? And finally, if you wish to love others as Christ wants you to, have him always in mind as you try to be of service to others. Tell him you are doing this for him. Tell him it is a small token of appreciation for all he has done for you. And never, never complain, even to yourself, that your charity is costing you too much. That's why God puts people into our lives in order that by loving them, we might give God grounds for loving us. I still have a little epilogue. It's a good idea before the close of a retreat to jot down on a small notepaper. You don't have much time left, so it can't be a big notepaper. Or holy card. One or two principal resolutions you desire to make and keep. Don't make the resolution unless you intend to keep it. That would be mocking God. And don't plan for the next 30 years if the Lord is going to keep you that long. 1 year is enough. And if the Lord wants me to, I'll be back. Be practical. We are practical when we resolve not on what we're going to do, that too, but especially on how you're going to do it. And I'm talking to the right audience. Women, as you know, are the great realists of human history. Men write the poems. They are the speculators. They've devised all the great theories of science. Women ask, "Honey, sounds nice, but where do you get the money?" So be practical. How? Second, be honest. No romanticism in dealing with God. What you honestly, in His presence, intend to do, tell Him. Don't be more generous than you intend to be. Maybe next year you can make more heroic resolutions. This year, be honest. Third, be firm. Three imperatives. Be practical, be honest, be firm. I'd like to have you do this if you haven't done this or the equivalent so far. Before we break up with the end of Mass. I've written some very precious things on napkins. Say on scrap paper that I've carried around with me for years. I want all of you, at least in a sentence or two, to tell God in writing what, with His grace, you intend to do to please Him in the coming year, in the light of what we have been thinking and talking about during the last 3 days and have somehow synthesized this morning. It's a good idea to look forward to our death and make the kind of decision now we will wish to have made the moment we face eternity. I would like to close with what is called the Suscite of St. Ignatius. This is the way St. Ignatius taught his sons and through them wants to teach others of how to close a retreat. I strongly recommend that you memorize, not necessarily as I give it here, find a copy somewhere in a prayer book and memorize the Suscipe. That's the Latin title. Take, O Lord, and receive my liberty, my memory, my understanding, and all my will. Whatever I have or possess, you have given to me. I give all of this back to you to be governed according to your will. I want only your love with your grace. Having but these, I am rich enough and ask for nothing more. Amen. All we want, all we need, is God's love and His grace. Let me tell you, when you have these, you are profoundly happy. And that's all we've been made for, to be happy. The secret is to believe and act on this faith. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.